Hello and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway to talk about our growing concern for America as a house divided along racial, political, and religious lines. We're delighted to have with us Bishop E.W. Jackson. He's well known throughout the Valley for his appearances here in his political campaigns and most recently as a speaker at our annual dinner last spring. A Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard Law School graduate, a pastor, and founder and president of STAND, S-T-A-N-D, Staying True to America's National Destiny. More than that, however, he's a powerful champion for our Judeo-Christian heritage, our constitutional principles, and our God-ordained rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Valley, throughout Virginia, and across America. Bishop Jackson, welcome back to Crossroads to talk with us about the growing divisions in America and what we can and should be doing to bring us together again.
Well, thanks for having me, as always. It's always a pleasure to be on with you all, Dean and Rita, and God bless you all for the tremendous work that you're doing, not only in the Shenandoah Valley, but in the country.
Thank you so much for being with us again. Let's begin the conversation about the divisions in America on the topic of race. Since you were last with us in May, the riots in Charlottesville and St. Louis are simply the most recent reminders of this racial divide in America. We could go also back to the riots in Ferguson in 2014 and Baltimore in 2015, or even further back to the devastating Watts riots in 1965 that took 34 lives over a period of 6 days. More than 1,000 people injured and almost 4,000 arrests were made. So if we lump those all together under the topic of race riots, can you help us understand their root causes and how best to respond?
I think the major problem that we have, the root of the problem that we have, is not racial at all, but spiritual. Mm. And I think part of the reason why we don't seem to be able to make progress and we're recycling the same problem over and over and over again. I think I may have shared this with you all before, but I was in Milwaukee right after the riots over the shooting of a young man by a police officer there, and the police actually had to create a barrier around the police station because people were threatening to actually assault the station. And somebody came up to me, a black man, older guy, came up to me and said, "I was here 50 years ago when we had race riots," he said, "and here we are 50 years later having the same problems." And I said to him, "and 50 years from now, we will be having the same problems if we don't begin to do something differently and to look at this differently." The fact of the matter is the spirit of division is a spiritual malady based upon the fall of mankind, and people tend to, without the grace of God, divide against each other. And they do it for all kinds of reasons. They do it for religion. They do it for geography. They do it over tribe. They just do it over a whole host of ideas, ideologies, obviously. Mm-hmm. And race is just a symptom of a much, much deeper problem. And that's why we keep having this problem in our country over and over again. And the only answer is the grace of God. The only answer is Jesus Christ. I mean, the answer is in putting this in its proper perspective. Most of the pogroms and the genocides and the horrible things that people do against one another have been done by people of the same race, if you want to call it that, against people of a similar demographic. I mean, Europeans killing other Europeans, Asians killing other Asians, Africans killing other Africans, or subjugating one another. Race just happens to be another basis for that division. And the only answer, the only antidote, is the love of God through Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. I say, you know, the beginning, to me, of resolving the problem is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But what people want to do is they want to use this for political purposes, and they want to go back, and they want to relitigate slavery, and they want to relitigate the Jim Crow era, and they want to create a constituency that they can use at the ballot box by keeping the racial division stoked. And they want to build their own little movement or their own little fiefdom or whatever it is. And all kinds of problems come into this. It starts to get used politically, And instead of solving the problem, we just end up perpetuating the problem. Mm-hmm. And sadly, without an awakening in our country, without a return to God and a sense of forgiveness and reconciliation as our primary motivations, we're going to, unfortunately, have these problems recur over and over again.
Well, Bishop, you have been dealing with these race problems for many years. And yes, it is more a spiritual issue than just a racial issue. And we're going to be talking about the need for a new awakening later on in the program. But still, getting back to this racial issue, you work with the African American community and with leaders and with pastors. Just at that level, is there anything that can or should be done short of a spiritual transformation?
I do think that you have to begin to change people's thinking. I tell my church all the time and my members, you can't have a biblical worldview and have a racial worldview. Mm-hmm. The two are incompatible. It's either one or the other.
Yeah.
And if you have a racial worldview, it means that you reject the biblical worldview, which is that God created all mankind. We all belong to him. He loves us all and has a plan for us all. And that plan is not distinguishable on the basis of skin color.
Yeah.
And if you don't view the life that way and you want to view it through a racial lens, just like they say, if you're a hammer, every problem is a nail. And if you view things in a racial way, everything becomes racial. And that's where we are right now in our culture. Everything is racial. Make America great again. That's racist.
Mm-hmm.
Put America first. That's racist. No matter what anybody says or does, whatever a racial patina can be placed upon it in order to use it politically, that's what people do. So I think the first thing, we just have to re-educate people and get people thinking about these issues differently. You know, I met somebody not too long ago who was telling me the story of how they grew up, and we were reflecting on the fact that every single human being has a story.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody suffered. Everybody's experienced some kind of pain, some kind of anguish, some family problem, some poverty, whatever it is. Everybody, I don't even care if you were born rich, mm-hmm. you are still going to face your share of pain and suffering. And instead of us relating to one another on our common humanity, we tend to want to divide from one another on the basis of some superficial aspect of our being, like the color of our skin. So that to me is what the pastors in my network, Ministers Taking a Stand, that's what we focus on, trying to get ourselves and our members to think differently about these issues, because if you think differently about them, you will respond differently, and you will hopefully bring about a different outcome whenever circumstances like the things that are producing these race riots occur.
Well, it's interesting. I just read a beautiful story this morning about a pro-Trump rally that was scheduled to take place in Washington, D.C. It was already underway, and a Black Lives Matter group came along, and their whole intent was to disturb that rally. And on an impulse, the leader of the pro-Trump rally said, "Hey, let's make a deal. I'll give you 2 minutes to come up to the platform and tell us about why you are here."
Mm-hmm.
That changed the whole spirit of the rally. Mm-hmm. They had their 2 minutes, and the leader of the Black Lives Matter protest said later how much he appreciated being given the opportunity to tell their side of the story. And maybe that, just at the personal level, is something that we can start doing.
Absolutely, and praying for people. We've got to debunk the notion that because I don't agree with you, I hate you.
Right.
Because I don't agree with you, I'm willing to express that is that I don't agree with you because I love you. And I think there's something you need to know that you don't know. Now, you may not agree with me and you may think I'm wrong, but I don't tell you what I'm telling you because I hate you. If I really hated you and didn't care, I wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
And so I think we've got to, as Christians, continue to practice love. And I know that because we're so divided politically, people won't accept that we do have this new ethic now that if you really love me, you will simply approve of everything I
yes.
do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never been the standard of love until we've come into sort of the modern. I don't call this the post-Christian era. I call this sort of the anti-Christian era
yes.
that people are trying to bring to America. But the fact of the matter is we can disagree, mm-hmm. my pastor used to say, without being disagreeable.
You know, before we move on, I want to say something to conservatives in our audience, because I have to tell you, conservatives can be just as nasty and just as ugly in expressing their viewpoint as anyone else. And we need to do a better job as conservatives in expressing our viewpoints graciously and with love and in a winsome way, not in an ugly way.
Amen. You just set forth principles of advanced Christianity there, mm-hmm. Rita. So,
yep.
Because we know that in the heat of debate, in the heat of battle, we sometimes say things that we shouldn't say or say them in a way that we shouldn't say them.
Yes.
And that's something I think we all have to continue to work on. But you are absolutely right.
Bishop, you've mentioned politics several times now. And there are political divisions, and that's the topic we want to take up next. You have been so active in the political arena. You have seen the divisions. You have seen expressions of hatred. So we have this division, left versus right. We have the division between parties, Democrats versus Republicans. We have the division on our current administration, Trump supporters versus Trump haters. How would you describe these divides, and how can we respond to them?
Well, first of all, I would say, Dean, it's bad. It really is bad. I think it may be the worst I've seen it in my lifetime since I've been observing politics. This is the first time I've actually heard, you know, reasonable, rational thinking people say, you know, are we on the brink of a civil war? I mean, what is going on here? And when rational, reasonable people who you respect begin to raise that kind of question, you know things are bad. Now, I don't believe that we're going to erupt into a civil war, but it's an indication of how emotional people are about this and how heavily they're feeling the pressure of the debate that is going on in our society. And, you know, I wish I had an easy, soft, comforting answer. But, you know, I heard Newt Gingrich say this, and I think he's absolutely right. When you have people who have absolutely divergent views, not just on a particular issue, but of life itself, mm-hmm. there's only one answer. Somebody wins and somebody loses. I mean, one viewpoint prevails and one viewpoint doesn't. I mean, on the issue of life, either we become a society which repents of our willingness to destroy the lives of unborn children by the millions, or we become a society of death in which we just say, well, you know what? It doesn't matter. Somebody's got to win this debate and somebody's got to lose it. That, to me, is the only outcome where we just perpetually debate it. But it is my hope that ultimately the life proposition will win out over the hearts and minds of Americans. And I think, therefore, so what should we do? I think we keep propounding the truth as vigorously, as compassionately, as eloquently, as logically, as persuasively as we can. And keep trying to get our fellow Americans to understand that a culture of death is bad for our country and it's bad for our families. It's just bad for everybody, and a culture of life is what we want to promote. So, I mean, I think that's the answer. I think we just have to keep fighting the good fight of faith and believe in God until we win.
Well, that actually brings up another great divide in America, and it's the divide over religion. We pledge allegiance to our republic as one nation under God, yet we are so divided today as Christian versus secular versus Islam. We also see the church and state divided as kingdoms in conflict, according to the late Chuck Colson. So how would you describe this divide, and how should we respond to it?
Well, of course, the religious divide has this added element of Islamic terror, mm-hmm. which makes it not simply a debate, but a life or death matter in some instances. And that obviously adds an element that we've never seen in our country, because generally speaking, in America, we have not resolved our religious differences by killing each other. We've resolved them by either refusing to talk about it, as many people say, I hear people say, my dad always said, we're not going to talk about religion or politics. So we've avoided those issues in some cases. Look, I think that this is the only solution. First of all, contrary to what the left often alleges, we don't want a theocracy, at least not until Jesus comes. I've often said, I'll be happy to have Jesus resolve all theological issues and to serve as king and absolute ruler and authority. I'm not giving that to anybody else.
Right.
So we don't want to be a theocracy, but we are a Christian country culturally. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we want to preserve. We want to preserve the cultural vitality of Christianity because, look, Nina, Rita, that's what made America great. In fact, the very notion of freedom of conscience is a Christian notion. Mm-hmm. The idea that, and we know that there have been periods in our country where people didn't quite seem to get this, but we as Christians know God doesn't want anybody forced to worship or serve him. Mm-hmm. That's not acceptable to him. We know that people have to be persuaded in their own mind, as the scripture says. And that's what we want. We want a culture in which people mm-hmm. are free to choose Jesus Christ, and for that matter, free not to choose him. But we want to uphold the values that make that possible. And those values really are uniquely Judeo-Christian values.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we fight to make sure that the culture, and I say politics, and I think law, too, is downstream from culture. We want to make sure that the culture is vibrantly Christian, because I think when we do, everything else is going to work better, including the freedom of others to believe something else or to not believe at all as they see fit.
We're talking here about church and state and how they can reconcile some of their differences. And I think Jesus said it right, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's. But there's another division within this topic, Bishop, if you could address this just briefly, and that's a division with the church. We find many churches no longer believing in the truth of the word. Jesus called us to be one body with diverse gifts, but with one spirit. And what is happening, in your view, to the unity of the church in America?
Let me say, Dean and Rita, I think that the greatest crisis America faces, and we're completely unaware of it, is the end of Judeo-Christian culture in America because the church in America is, in fact, declining. You talk about the church divided. Well, the fact of the matter is, if George Barna and Pew Research are right, three-quarters of the church have just gone into apostasy. They just don't believe that the Bible is true. They don't believe that any of the moral rules that God gave us really matter, or at least unless they choose to make them matter, and the ones they choose to reject don't matter. And so you've only got about one-quarter of the churches in America that still believe the Bible is the Word of God. And then we've got a problem with cowardice and compromise, even among those churches, because according to the data, only 1 in 10 of the pastors who still believe that are willing to apply it to the issues of the day, are willing to talk about the lives of unborn children, are willing to talk about marriage as God defined it, because they see those issues as political or divisive, mm-hmm. and they don't want to lose church members or lose ties and that sort of thing. So we've got a major spiritual problem within the church itself, and I think that that problem, if it continues, is going to do great damage to America as we've known it. And think about Europe and where Europe is now. Europe is no longer a Christian continent. The countries in Europe are no longer Christian. They've got a bunch of buildings that are empty. People don't go. 10, 11, 12% church attendance throughout Europe. That's where America's headed. Now, we're a long way from that yet, but the data indicates year by year, we become less and less and less Christian, fewer and fewer people identifying as Christian. I think that's the big crisis. To bring people back to God, back to the Bible, back to church, back to a vibrant spiritual life, and to reverse this trend so that year by year we see more people identifying as Christians as opposed to fewer, and we see our young people, what's often referred to as millennials, we see them starting to identify again with the church and with God in a major way. And I think that's the real division that we have. You know, for those of us who still believe the Bible is the Word of God, I find that we are perfectly unified. I mean, we may not agree on every scriptural doctrine and all of that, but we love Jesus. We love the church. We love one another. We're fighting for the same cause. We get along great. It works well. It's for those people who have rejected the fundamental tenets of the faith, who look upon us as some kind of, I've heard this phrase used, Bible idolaters.
Oh, my
people
goodness.
People who somehow worship the Bible. So it's hard to figure out how that division's ever going to change. I just think the church needs a rebirth.
Just a final divide, and this is pretty short term, but in just a little over a month, we have elections in Virginia. We've got a great divide between the candidates for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. All 100 seats in the Virginia General Assembly are in play. And as you know, better than anybody, perhaps, Democrats and Republicans couldn't be further apart on these issues. So, what can you suggest for our listeners as a guide for how to choose the best candidates? I saw on your website you have something called Vote the Rock. So, how can we choose leaders who treasure our Judeo-Christian values and our constitutional principles?
Well, you know, I've often said that elections are not between Jesus and another candidate. They're always between flawed human beings.
Mm.
And the best we can do is choose to support the candidates who are closest to our values and who we believe will more likely uphold them than the other. And that's going to mean that we are often electing people who are imperfect, who are not our ideal, who, if we had our choices, we would pick somebody else. Would we choose somebody else to run for that office? But those are often not the choices we're given. So we have to choose the very best candidates we can and always look ahead with a vision to building, as they say, a backbench, of people who are primed and ready to step up and step into these offices with the kind of conviction that we share. But in the meantime, we always, as William Buckley's principle, we elect the most conservative, and by that I mean the person closest to Bible-believing views that we can get. And I think it's clear the Republicans in this case are the people who are closest to Christian biblical values, and these Democrats are as far from it and getting further from it every day as you can get.
I'm going to make it very simple, and again, looking back, I'd suggest that our listeners go to your website at standamerica.us and look at your information there under Vote the Rock. And for me, it's very simple. If a candidate doesn't understand that life begins at conception, then he does not deserve my trust or my vote, and we must protect that life from that moment forward. If a candidate does not understand that marriage is between only one man and one woman, he or she does not deserve my trust and will not get my vote. Those are two benchmarks that I find very useful, and of course, there are others as well.
I think what you said a minute ago was so important, Bishop, because I know that there are Christians who seem to adopt the attitude of, well, neither candidate is really good enough, so I'm just going to sit the election out in protest. And that just helps us get further down the wrong course when Christians choose to
mistake.
Do that.
Oh, my goodness, Rita, yeah. That is a big, big mistake. And I think that's in part why we are where we are right now,
yes,
in our country and in Virginia as well. And so people, I have said this, and it may seem a little bit dramatic. I've been accused of being a little bit dramatic from time to time. But I really believe that to live in a country where you are free to choose the leaders who serve you in government, to not exercise that opportunity is a sin against God.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that is a gift from God,
yes,
so that you're not overseen by a dictator who controls,
yeah,
your life. And if you throw that opportunity away, to me, it is an affront to God and a disdain of the wonderful gift that he's given us as Americans. So, yeah, you've got to go out and make the very best choice you can.
I agree. Well, let's get back to the spiritual crisis in America that has come up throughout this program today. Earlier this year, you called for a new Christian awakening in America. Tell us again, remind us why that may be the only true solution for overcoming our racial, political, and religious divides.
Yeah, well, I've said it this way. What has happened in our country today is not, a problem here, a problem there. It is the equivalent of a cancer that has metastasized and gotten into the bloodstream and is now growing in every part of the body. And there's no surgical procedure that you can perform to cure that, because it is all over. It's in every institution of our culture. It's in our colleges. It's in our universities. It's in our public schools. It's in our entertainment. It's in our corporations. It's in our arts and our museums. And I mean, we just had, for example, Museum of African American History refuses to put anything about Clarence Thomas in its museum, but the Smithsonian is putting the clothing of Colin Kaepernick in its museum. And Colin Kaepernick is, frankly, a godless, far-leftist ideologue. And Clarence Thomas is a godly man who is a Supreme Court justice. I mean, so even our museums, everything is infected with this. And there's only one antidote to it. And the only antidote is Jesus Christ and his Holy Spirit cleansing us on the inside. I mean, we can cleanse ourselves on the outside with a shower, but you can't cleanse yourself on the inside with that. It takes the love of Jesus Christ. And, and we need an awakening in our country that can go into every area and cause people to see things afresh and anew, to see things differently. I mean, Black Lives Matter, for example, if you go to their website, people think it's about black lives. You go to their website, oh, no, it's about a whole host of psychosexual political ideas about transgenderism and about the nuclear family needs to be dismantled and a whole bunch of what I would call utter insanity. Mm-hmm. And yet the entertainment culture, sports figures, people all over the country endorse this and think this is just a great thing. So it's insinuated itself into everything. There's no one lever you can pull that will say, oh, well, this will solve that problem. No, it's too deep. It's too profound. It's too intertwined into everything in our culture. And it's going to take an awakening to really solve the problem and bring a generation up that finally begins to see things perhaps the way we did in the 40s and 50s. And we weren't perfect, obviously, at that time, but there was a consensus about moral and spiritual matters that I think held the country together in a way that we don't have now.
Bishop, that's a perfect segue, but you only have 30 seconds left. Tell us about your National Awakening Conference coming up next month.
It's going to happen on October 20th and 21st here in Chesapeake. They can go to our website, standamerica.us, to find out about it and to register. We'd love to have you come. David Barton is speaking, and we're going to be honoring and hearing from Brigitte Gabrielle as well, who has been premier spokesperson for Judeo-Christian values and the threat of Islam.
That's fantastic. Bishop, it's been so good to have you with us. Thank you for coming. And Janet and I will be with you in Chesapeake on October 20 for your conference. We're really looking forward to it.
Thank you both, and God bless you.
Well, this brings us to a close of our program on A Divided America with Bishop E.W. Jackson and the need for a new great awakening in America. If you'd like to listen to the program again or share it with your friends, visit our website, valleyfamilyforum.org, and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. And we want to thank so many of you for your prayers, encouragement, and financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, please send a check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and Master Engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.